In that auspicious time of March of 1971, right below us in the park of Cross Maidan, that by the mercy of the Supreme Lord Sri Krishna, the greatest fortune of my life took place. In that he brought me together with my eternal Father and Master, His Divine Grace, Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. There was a large and beautiful pandal that was erected, and tens and thousands of people came to hear his divine message. Of course, tonight when I look down, I see in the same place the Apollo Circus, where tens and thousands of people are also coming, but not to hear a divine message, but to see the behavior of animals. And although that is their enjoyment, to see the behavior of trained animals, it is also very significant. Because I remember very clearly some of the things that Srila Prabhupada was speaking about in that same place. He was telling the residents of Bombay that if you do not very carefully and sincerely hear the message of Bhagwan, then your life will be no better than animals. In fact, the difference between human beings who are not following the path of Dharma and animals is simply the difference between two legs and four legs. He was saying like this. And right now, at the Apollo Circus, there is probably elephants dancing on two legs. So they are training animals to dance on two legs. And then there's really no difference. Srila Prabhupada was pleading with the citizens of this great land of India. Please try to understand that the night I first met Srila Prabhupada was the first large-scale lecture that he had given in India after he established this worldwide Krishna consciousness movement. He was pointing out that everyone who was born in Bharatvarsha is by birthright specially gifted with the grace of God. Because the philosophy, the spiritual heritage, the purity of the great saints and avatars of this land have come to liberate the entire world from suffering. And they are our forefathers. And they have handed their mission to us. But how many are taking this seriously? The West is very expert at technology and science and economic development. That is their gift to the world. But that gift has become putrefied into a curse because there is no spiritual basis. Because there is no vision of what is truth, what is God, and how to live in harmony with God. But the great saints and sages and the great Vedic literatures written by Vedavyas, Valmiki Muni, and so forth, they are the treasure by which the whole world can gain spiritual vision. The Vedas do not teach a religion. In the Western world, we find there are many religions. There is Judaism, which was established on a covenant between God and Abraham. Then in that same tradition, as one of the descendants of King David, who was the king of Israel, Lord Jesus Christ was born. His religion was named Christianity. Later on, another descendant of Abraham, from his other son, Ishmael, was born the great prophet Muhammad. His religion was called upon by the name of Islam, which means to submit to God. The Vedas teach what is called Sanatana Dharma, which is not a religion, but it is the spiritual principle in which all religions are residing. Sanatana Dharma means to reconnect our consciousness with its supreme source, to reawaken our eternal constitutional nature. The Dharma, sometimes it is defined as duty, but that is not a very philosophical understanding of Dharma. In Sanskrit, the word Dharma literally means that which cannot be separated from one's existence. In other words, one's constitutional position, one's essence. The essence of sugar is sweet. You cannot have sugar that is not sweet. The essence of water, the dharma of water, is liquidity. In its natural condition, it is liquid. But if you put water in an unnatural condition, it becomes solid. That is our condition. Because the atmosphere all around us and the atmosphere within us is unnaturally situated, we have taken a view of this world which is not according to our real essence. The nature of every living being is to serve. We are all serving someone. Either we are serving our family, or we are serving our government, or our employee. We are all serving our senses. And if everything else is taken away, we buy a dog or a cat to serve that. Everyone must find some pleasure through the process of serving. And the enjoyment everyone is seeking is to serve in a reciprocation of love. this is coming from our natural dharma, Sanatana Dharma. The inclination of the soul to serve God with love. And human form of life is exclusively meant for the purpose of reawakening this inherent quality of loving service to the Absolute Truth. And if that is not awakened in this human form of life, according to all the shastras, and according to all the great saints and sadhus and rishis, and according to God, we have wasted the most valuable, precious opportunity for nothing. In this world, whatever we acquire, it is here today, tomorrow gone away. And no one can change the laws of nature. But how we are working so hard, foaming at the mouth like mules and asses, just for a little money, for a little food, for a nice place to sleep, for a little prestige. And what is the result? The result is frustration. Because something always creeps in your life, unavoidably, that creates great anxiety. And what is that anxiety? That you're either losing or about to lose what you've worked so hard for. Just like in our country of America, there was one president, Mr. Richard Nixon. He spent his whole life dedicated to a career. He begged, borrowed, stole, he probably killed to attain the position of president. He betrayed his best friends, his colleagues. He stepped on everybody's head to attain that position. That's what you have to do for a big leadership position in most cases, in most parts of this world. And after all that, he did it for prestige, so that he could have immortal fame that I was the president. But by some divine arrangement, he lost his intelligence. Everything ultimately is divine, even material nature. Daivi heshu gunamayi. Made some mistakes. And now, for the rest of modern history, he's infamous. He's a cheater. He's a rogue. He was torn down from his position. He became a broken man. If you try to serve anyone but God, and the God in the heart of all living beings, whoever it may be, you will be dissatisfied. You'll be frustrated. Here in India, Mahatma Gandhi, he gave his life for this nation. He was willing to take all risks. He was willing to fast beyond man's comprehensibility. He was willing to put himself against the most powerful empire, the British Empire. He gave his life for the people of India as a servant, a humble servant. And what was the result? That one of his own countrymen murdered him. in our country, John F. Kennedy, he did the same thing. He took so many risks. If you read the history of this president, what his morality was, that's something else. But my God, he took such risks to uphold the freedom of people in that nation, more than any other president in the modern day. He was bold, he was brave, he was standing up for the freedom of the minorities. But one of his own country, to make for one purpose alone, to make America a great place, a free place. He was a servant of his countrymen. And what happened? One of his own countrymen murdered him. According to dozens of books that are being circulated by very authoritative authors, it was representatives of the U.S. government that actually killed him. And I've told this story a couple times in the last day. We serve our senses throughout our life, and however much service we offer to our senses, they're never satisfied by our service. They always want more. And we're never satisfied by serving them. And after 90 or 100 years of serving our senses are still not satisfied, still demanding more and not letting us go. There's a story in the Srimad Bhagavatam about Maharaj Chitraketu. He so much was anxious for a son. He had several wives. Why did he have several wives? Because he needed to have a son. It's the duty of a king to have a son. Otherwise, who will take over the throne? And it's such a great joy for a father to have a son. So when one wife couldn't have a son for him, he got another, then another, then another, then another. He had many. And finally, by the blessings of Angira Muni, he was awarded a beautiful son. And Angira Muni told him, you should name him Harshashok, because he will be like everything else in this world. He will be a source of pleasure, but then also distress. So he was thinking, little distress, I don't mind. It will be so much pleasure. But in this world, you know, one man's food is another man's poison. The more you have, the more somebody somewhere is going to be envious and want what you have. So this one particular queen, she was getting so much attention because she created a son for Maharaj Chitraketu. And Maharaj Chitraketu was so happy. He was just weeping joyful tears. Such a beautiful child was his. Talked like him, looked like him. So auspicious. And his wife, she was so happy. And he was giving her so much love and attention. But in the process, without knowing it, he accidentally forgot that he wasn't showing the same amount of attention to his other wives, who were all very, very high-class, chaste, faithful wives. They weren't low-class people. But even amongst such very distinguished aristocratic and pious people, envy creeps in. And they couldn't live, they couldn't tolerate being neglected by their husband. So there was only one solution. They poisoned the baby. And when the mother came, she tried to wake him up. And the nurse was there. And they shook him and called out his name. Time and time again, they were doing whatever they could to try to wake him from his sleep. And with every second, there was fear and anxiety growing in their hearts. And then they realized, he's been murdered. He's dead. The mother fell unconscious, unable to tolerate such grief. And when the news reached his father, it was like a tumultuous thunderbolt crashing into his very soft heart. He was devastated. He blacked out. He began to weep. He tried to go to where the body was, but at every two steps he would fall to the ground. After great effort, fainting, waking, fainting, waking, weeping, he finally crawled to his child and took it into his arms and began to wail. What is the source of pleasure in this world becomes source of pain. That is the nature of the world. You cannot change material nature. You can change your heart. That you can do. So Maharaj Chitraketu, he could not even rule his kingdom any longer. He was immobilized. His mind was crippled. And then Angira Muni returned, along with Narada Muni, just to see how our Maharaj Chitraketu was doing. And when they saw his condition, they explained to him, this is the nature of this world, hankering and lamenting. When you didn't have a son, you were in great frustration, longing to have one. For a short time you were enjoying pleasure, but to the degree you enjoyed pleasure having, to that degree now you have to suffer, taken away. But don't you know inevitably he would be taken away, whether it's today or tomorrow. Either he dies or you die. It's never going to be any easier. But Maharaj Chitraketu was so much immersed in the ocean of grief that he could not hear good philosophy. Not from these great sadhus. So Narada Muni performed a miracle. He spoke to Harshashok, the baby, and he said, why don't you get up? You're causing your father too much grief. And the child got up. Not only could he walk, but he could talk. And Narada Muni asked, why is it that you are so cruel that you have left your father in such an ocean of lamentation? And Harshashok replied, after looking around, who are you speaking of as my father? This man? He's my father? Which father? Do you know how many fathers I've had? Through the 8,400,000 species, I've had 8,400,000 fathers, 8,400,000 mothers, far more brothers and sisters, aunts, uncles, wives. How come I don't remember any of them? What is their significance to my soul? I am not this body. I am the eternal soul. everyone is so much under the illusion of the body that they take their bodily relations and their bodily pleasures to be the all in life. Perhaps tomorrow the body will be finished. And what do you have to take with you? Nothing but a dreary void. My father is God. He's the father of my soul. Aham bija pratapita. The unfortunate people like this man in this world, they're so much attached to the superficial designations of the bodily concept of life that they forget their eternal father, their eternal mother. The beginning of human life is to realize I am not this body, I am the eternal soul. On the spiritual platform, we are all related. Whether we are Muslims or Hindus, Sikhs, whether we are Jains or Jews or Christians or Mormons or atheists, or whether we're elephants dancing on two legs, or whether we're spiders crawling on eight legs, we're all related intimately on the spiritual level. But on the physical level, the only relationship we have is that which will ultimately bring us sorrow. And when Maharaj Chitraketu heard these words from his own son, he became enlightened. He realized what is the truth. And from that point, he began to dedicate his life in the loving service of the Lord. It is not that he gave up his kingdom. He continued his responsibilities for some time. He continued taking care of his wives and all of his citizens. He was most responsible. But his constant meditation and concentration was how to perform his duties in this world for the purpose of self-realization, as an offering of service to Krishna. That is Sanatan Dharma. Yat karoshi yad ashnashi yaj duhoshi dadasi yat yat tapasyasi konte yat tat kurusho madarapanam. Krishna says in Gita, all that you do, all that you eat, all that you offer and give away, all austerities you may perform should be done as an offering to me. But how many are doing like this? This is the great contribution, according to God Himself, that He has entrusted the people of India to distribute throughout the world. Sanatan Dharma is that way of life, that way of thinking, that can bring all religions together in its essence. Not based on superficial ritual, but based on loving surrender to Krishna. Twenty years ago, exactly, Srila Prabhupada was speaking this message to tens and thousands of the residents of Bombay, that this is the sacred duty that God has given us. Why are we so lazy? Why we are working for everything but our own spiritual lives? Why we're taking our religion so cheaply, thinking a little ritual, a little puja, and a little prayer for some material benedictions is pious and it's good enough? Prahlad Maharaj told his classmates, Komaram acharit pragyo dharamat bhagavatan iha, that now, whatever your age is, whether you are 5 years old or whether you're 105 years old, now is the time to cultivate Bhagavad Dharma, devotional service to Lord Hari. And according to our Guru Maharaj, the world is suffering. Why? Because the Indian people are so spiritually lazy. He was telling us right here in Cross Maidan, he was telling all of you, and through his insignificant representative, he's telling you again today. He was explaining how he is just one man. Not a very important man, he said. Not so highly educated. Not such a great pundit of the scriptures like many others. Not a great tapasi. He said, I'm just one simple, ordinary man who has taken the message of India as coming through the parampara from my guru, and I simply repeated the words of my Guru Maharaj, which is the message of Krishna. And hundreds and thousands of people are surrendering to Krishna by one small man's efforts. And he said, it's nothing that any of you cannot do. You could do more. This is what he told us. I began my mission when I was 70 years old. I had very little energy. I had a short life. I was from time to time getting heart attacks. And yet, simply because I tried on behalf of my Guru Maharaj to spread this great message of Bhagavad Gita without adulteration, without speculation, without my opinions, but just presenting it as it is. Manmana bhava mad bhakto mad yajim nam namaskuru mam evaishasi satyam te prati jani priyoshime. Krishna says, always think of me, become my devotee, worship me and offer your homage unto me. In this way you will come to me without fail. I promise you this. This is my word. You are my dear friend, Arjuna. Bhagavad Gita is not simply speaking to Arjuna, it is personally speaking to the heart of each and every one of us. Srila Prabhupada explained there are so many interpreters who give their own opinion of the Gita. When Krishna says, surrender to me, he means surrender to the unmanifest invisible within him, or surrender to the concept of dharma, or surrender to something else. Sarva dharmam purityaja mam ekam sharanam vraja. Prabhupada was telling us that I just repeated what Krishna said. Surrender to Krishna. Abandon all varieties of religion. Always think of him. Become his devotee. Worship him. This is Sanatana Dharma. And because I simply broadcasted the message of Vedanta as it is, millions of people's lives are changing all over the world. People who give interesting opinions, they may get tens and thousands of people to hear them, but do their hearts change? Religion is not meant for entertainment. Religion is not meant for philosophical occupation of the mind. Religion is meant to change your heart, to change the quality of your life, to change the whole purpose of your life, to bring you to surrendering to the feet of God. Whatever occupation, whatever religion you are accepting in your life, if in the end it does not culminate in loving devotion to the Supreme Godhead, it's all nothing but a waste of your time. Your life has been stolen away from you by illusion. Srila Prabhupada explained that the West is very strong physically, and India is quite weak. Economically, what is a rupee worth on the world market? It's less and less every day, I believe. When I came to India in 1969-70, there was 7 rupees to a dollar. Now how many rupees are there to a dollar? 26. Huh? 26. And the dollar is not very strong either. So what to speak of the rupee? India doesn't have much to contribute to the world in this level. Prabhupada explained that Western science, technology, and economic growth is like a strong, stout body. But if you have a strong, stout body, but no vision, if you're blind, what are you going to do with all your strength? You're just going to push over everything. You just get a big, powerful body, it's running, it's bumping into everything because it's blind, and it's just going to cause havoc. What's happening? Atomic energy. It's a wonderful discovery. But what do they do with it? They build bombs to destroy the world. Industry. It's very nice. It creates so many conveniences. But after it pollutes the air and pollutes the water and pollutes the ground, and everybody's dying of cancer, is it worth the convenience? In America, according to the scientists and the doctors, by 2000, 1/3 of the population will have cancer. And according to other statistics, by the year 2000, 1/5 of the population may have AIDS. This is what happens when you have a powerful society with no spiritual vision. But Srila Prabhupada explains that India is like a lame man, but with good eyes. If we simply see through the immortal, eternal, and sacred scriptures, and see through the great acharyas and avatars that have come here, and take adhere to their words, India has the vision that could guide the whole world. If the blind man with the strong body allows the lame man with good eyes to climb upon his back, between the two of them, they could do great things for everyone. So it was right here at Cross Maidan that Srila Prabhupada introduced his Western disciples to the people of India. And he told them that, I'm an old man. These people are coming from wealthy backgrounds. They're very highly educated. I came to America with 30 rupees. And he couldn't even exchange the 30 rupees. Nobody wanted them. Why are they so mad after me? Why are there tens and thousands of these American, European, Japanese boys and girls mad after me? I have no money to give them. I have no nice house to give them. They're giving up their big soft beds to sleep on the floor. They're giving up their wonderful meals to eat chapatis and dal. I only have one thing to give them, the truth. And then he pleaded with all of his countrymen and women, please help me to distribute the truth. Let us change the world. Let me help you to distribute the truth. Let us change our own lives. According to Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who was considered, according to the Bhagavatam, to be the avatar of the Kali Yuga, the Yuga avatar. Bharatu bhumite hoila manusya janma jara janma saratak khari khara para upakar. That it is my command upon every person throughout generations who takes birth in India. It is your duty to perfect your life by taking to the process of Sanatana Dharma. And with this great gift, it is my command that you do the highest welfare work for all humanity by distributing it, by assisting those who are distributing it. So this change of heart is the most valuable treasure we can obtain in our own life or give to our loved ones. Rishabhdev, he was another one of your countrymen, an incarnation of God who appeared here in India. He explained, Guru na sasyat, swajani na sasyat, pita na sasyat, janani na sasyat, that unless you understand the principles of Sanatana Dharma and follow it in your own life, Sanatana Dharma means the process of surrendering to Krishna, to God. God has many names. By taking to the process, unless you do like this, and you can teach your dependents how to do it, it is sinful in the eyes of God to become a parent. We think we're such good parents if we give our children nice food, nice toys, nice television, nice telephone, nice car, nice clothes, nice home, nice education. But in the eyes of God and anybody who understands the goal of life, unless we have given our child all facilities and opportunity through our example and teachings so that they never have to take birth again, we are sinful parents. That is not my opinion. That is God's opinion. But how many take this seriously? Most parents are afraid to give their children too much religion. One reason is because they're too lazy to do it themselves. The child will imitate whatever the parent does. This is the first duty. We must purify our own hearts. And we must be an agent of the Lord to help purify all others' hearts. So, Actually, I had no intention on speaking of this subject matter tonight, but this introduction to my lecture somehow or other made me start remembering Prabhupada's message to all of you the first day I met him. He was preaching to the Indians. I was, by his divine grace, we had never met before. There were tens and thousands of people in the audience, and he personally saw me and called me up to sit right at his feet on the stage. So I was listening with very, very deep attention. I had met so many hundreds of sadhus and gurus and yogis. I thought he's another one of them. And when I was sitting at his lotus feet, he began preaching to the people of India the same message that I'm teaching you today. And he was looking at me. So many times he was casting loving, merciful, but serious glances upon me. And I remember thinking, he's preaching to the Indians to understand the great wealth of their own culture and stop running after other cultures. But I'm a after other cultures. But I'm almost the only one here that's not an Indian. Why does he keep looking at me? I never knew until tonight. I just thought of it. He knew that someday I would be saying the same thing to the Indians. It's not my message. It's your message. But because one of you is so merciful, he saved my life. Because one Indian was not spiritually lazy, but he took the order of God to his heart. He came out from amongst you. Let us very seriously ponder upon what is really valuable within my life. Let us not leave this pravachan tonight and think, yes, it was a good talk. I enjoyed it. And the prasad was very nice. You can go to a cinema and come out with that opinion. Yes, I enjoyed it. Let us take Srila Prabhupada's great sacrifice seriously within our own hearts. Thank you very much. How is it that we can tangibly, practically purify our lives and do this highest welfare to others? What did Srila Prabhupada do? He simply came to the West and taught us God is none different than his name. Give up sins. No illicit sex, no intoxication, no gambling, no meat eating, and chant the holy name of God. This alone will bring you to the highest platform of self-realization. The name of God is none different than God himself. All the power and all the mercy of the Supreme Absolute Truth is contained within the sound of the name. And it's so easy. It doesn't matter what caste you are from, what what nationality you are from, whether you are rich or poor, young, old, male or female, educated, uneducated. Anyone could call upon the name of God. Anyone can associate with saintly people and learn how to live a pure life. All Srila Prabhupada did is distribute this message, and he saved the lives of millions from utter waste. Applying this principle to our life will have such a powerful, powerful effect. Simply by regularly hearing in the association from genuine saintly persons and learning from them how to live a pure life, and most of all, how to attentively call out God's holy name. In the Vedas and in many scriptures of the world, there are many names of God. But according to the Kali Santarana Upanishad, of all the great mantras in the Vedas, there is one Mahamantra, which is especially recommended for this age of Kali Yuga. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Let us put aside all our petty little selfish, egoistic problems in life, and let's try to solve all our problems by taking shelter of the holy name. It is the only real solution, because it transports the consciousness from this selfish bodily conception to the eternal spiritual conception. In that realm of transcendental consciousness, there is only pure love and divine peace. Let us find that great treasure of love of God within our own heart. The key to that treasure is in the sound of God's name and in the mercy of his devotees.